You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to a new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records, a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, celebrity chef Chris Santos. I hate calling myself that. And underground metal connoisseur Matt Bacon, who loves being called that. This is your new favorite podcast for all things heavy metal, as well as breakdowns of your favorite combat sports and riffing on some food talk every week with very special guests from across the globe. Welcome to another edition of Delirious Nomads with myself, my partner, Matt Bacon. This is brought to you from Metal Blade Records, Blacklight Media Records, and we couldn't be more excited. We have the legendary, Johan Hegg from Amon Amarth. I can't even believe it. He's here.
All right. Hey, how you doing?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for doing this, brother.
Hey, my pleasure, man. It's an honor to be on there.
Good to see you. The only way I can see
you. Hey. Yeah, you too, man. It's been a while.
When's the last time I saw you? Was that also Brian's party? I can't remember.
Yeah, online. But like in person, it's got to be a couple of years ago.
Yeah. I remember. I think it was at the Rainbow Room.
That might be it. Yeah.
It's been quite a year.
Oh,
we're recording this on, what is it, Thursday, March 17th. So we're about a year, 2 weeks into the pandemic. Where have you been this whole time? Have you been in Sweden the whole time?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, we were on our South and Latin America run when the pandemic hit, basically. And we had to cut the five last shows off the tour and go back home. And since then, pretty much I've been home. I mean, stuff's been going on at home with, you know, so it's been good to be home as well, but you know, it's kind of weird. I'm not used to being home this long.
I mean, I'm sure you've read and are aware that, or talked to people. It's been really rough here in the States, the management of COVID and everything. What's it been like in Sweden?
It's kind of weird how it's been, but technically we didn't do any like hard lockdowns or anything. I think one of the major problems we had in Sweden, which is why we have a lot of fatalities really, is that in the beginning they kind of missed because nobody really knew what was going on, so they kind of missed to protect the elderly, like the old folks' homes and all that stuff. So once the disease started getting in there, people were dying. A lot of people were dying. It's not the worst in Europe, but it's pretty bad. But on the other hand, I think economically and like for most people in general, I think we're better off because they didn't really do a hard lockdown. They're trying to enforce a lot of it now, but it's difficult in Sweden because Sweden hasn't been in a war since like 1809 or something like that, right? So we don't have any martial law or anything. So the government can't just legally can't shut the society down. They have to use other laws to do it. So one thing they're trying to do now is to stop people from socializing like outdoors. So they go they go through the liquor law, basically, saying that you can't serve alcohol in a restaurant after like 7:30. That's it, right? Which basically meant that everybody who has got a restaurant now has to close at 8. So, you know, it's like they're kind of going after that one business for some reason, you know, because they can't really shut anything else down. So it's kind of a weird situation in Sweden because they put a law in place now so they can like do certain things, but they still don't want to do a complete shutdown of the society. And I think it's a good idea. I think it's good. But at the same time, you know, spreading again. But yeah, it's been weird.
Yeah, I obviously can relate on the restaurant side. I have 37 of them, and my company has 37 of them. And we've had to shut down almost everything. And, you know, and then reopen only outside and then shut that back down and then reopen outside and a little bit inside and then shut that back down. It's just been it's been a nightmare. Although everything's starting to open back up again. And this time, it's like it might be for good, but who knows?
But you guys have gotten pretty far with the vaccinations and stuff. In Sweden, it's been problems because deliveries have been canceled or delayed. So it's it's kind of dragging now, and we'll see. I think they were hoping to have the majority of people vaccinated by July, and now we're maybe looking at September instead. Yeah,
So how does that feel for 2021 and a band that kind of tours on the scale that yours does?
Well, I mean, For us at the moment, we're in a situation where we weren't, like, we had summer festivals planned, but we kind of figured they weren't going to happen anyways. We were hoping, well, maybe they still will. I mean, if vaccinations pick up, we might be able to do some of the shows this summer. I doubt we'll be able to do all of them. Some festivals here in Europe are already canceled, like Download, for instance, yeah. And I think Hellfest in France as well. Yeah. So some of those like festivals are canceled, but ours are the majority of our shows were in July and then a couple of late August. So if things go well, maybe we can do the last ones in July and a couple in August, maybe. But the thing is, like, once they start opening things up, it's going to take a lot of time for people to be able to travel anyways. And yeah, I think it's going to be like a little bit of a messy situation when they start opening things up again before everything is in place.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, everyone is going to want to go out on the road, obviously. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, that's gonna be really, really weird. I think lots of bands are gonna go try to go do touring, and it's gonna be difficult not only to book venues, but just, you know, to do decent tours, because everybody's gonna be be out there.
I feel for tour managers who have to route tours, like, because it's gonna be really, really hard to book.
It's gonna be difficult, but. I mean, so what we've been talking about is to take it relatively easy, and instead of going back on the road on an old album, because, I mean, basically we had to cut the touring season for Berserker in half. We had to cut in the middle. So we had a couple of tours lined up that we couldn't do. If we're going to come back and do them, we're going to have an album that's a couple of years old. So we figured maybe instead start writing new material and release a new album before we tour. So.
Yeah, so that was my next question. Is that, have you started that process already?
No, but we've been talking about it. It feels like the good thing for us to do the situation we're in, because there is a lot of people a lot of bands who've released albums that are like eager to tour on them, but that haven't toured at all. And those albums are relatively new and all that stuff. And it would be weird to come out there and try to compete with bands who have newer albums and all that stuff.
Right, so. Sure. But you, if I'm right, this is next year, 2022 is your 20th anniversary, right?
30th.
Yeah.
I mean, 30th. Say. Sorry. That's what I meant. Yeah. That's what I meant.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Sorry.
Made me feel a bit younger there. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I actually didn't think about that. That's true. Yeah.
That seems like it needs a tour of its own. No.
Yeah, maybe could be something. We'll see. I mean, it's. I actually, honestly, haven't thought about it at all. I'm not sure if anybody else has. We've been occupied with trying to figure out what to do this year that we like really don't have anything to do. I mean, there's a couple of plans that we're trying to put together that are online stuff. Again, we actually kind of have to travel to make it happen. So I don't know, like, how to really do it, but. I guess we'll figure it out somehow.
You guys aren't really in close proximity with each other, the rest of the band? You're kind of far apart?
Well, we are. I mean, we're all in Sweden, and, you know, it's not that. The problem for us is that all the gear and all the equipment, like, we have in Europe, basically, is in Germany. So,
right, okay.
So it's either transport everything up here or we go down there. It's still a hassle, you know.
What's the last year look like for you? What have you been up to?
Not much, really. Just taking some well-deserved time with my wife and cats and the dog. Yeah, no, but we've been hanging out here in Sweden and doing a lot of cool stuff. You know, I started a project with my wife where we do like physical training. Like she's a yoga instructor, and but she kind of wanted to do something like yoga inspired, but also with like influences from Norse mythology and all that stuff to create something unique, because a lot of the yoga that you see today is perhaps it's very generic, and it's like it kind of strayed a long way from where it came from. So she thought, well, what if I take my inspiration like that we have locally and bring it into this physical practice and try to be inspired by our ancestors and their philosophy and psychology even. And I thought it was a super cool idea. And she asked me if I wanted to be a part of it. And I said, hell yeah, because I've been doing a yoga practice as a warm up for like 12 years now, basically. So it's something that I do almost every day. And obviously when I'm home, I do yoga with my wife and all that stuff. And it's really helped my body in a awesome way. So we started doing this thing called Heggvägar, which basically means the way of the Heggs. We have this Instagram account called Heggvägar. It's Heggvegr. So it's kind of weird. It's an E missing at the end there, but it's Old Norse. Vägar is Old Norse for way. So we have the Instagram account, and then we also have a TV channel, like an online TV channel, or something called Boon TV, boon.tv. There people can subscribe to the whole channel and take the classes and everything. And some of them are like weekly, but then everything is saved in the archives. So like you can go back and do classes and all that stuff. Or if you just want to try it out, you can purchase the classes as a one-off thing as well. So it's kind of a cool way to reach out and to stay busy and to have a good time as well.
Yeah, no, it's been cool. It's been cool talking to people and seeing how they've used the time and how people have pivoted in unexpected ways to, kind of not just take up the time, but to like kind of learn, either learn a new skill or bring something out to the people like you're doing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's great, man.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things we did actually was we did like a segment called Learn the Sequence, where my warm-up practice that I've done for all these years, that where we teach that, we kind of developed it a little bit, and then we teach that, and so that people can try it out. And because it honestly has helped my, it's helped my body, but also my singing a lot. So it's really good stuff, actually.
So something I've talked about a lot with Einar from Wardruna has been this idea of like why Old Norse culture sort of resonates around the world, you know. What is it about Old Norse culture that intersects with yoga? And then why do you think that appeals to kind of people on a broader level?
Well, I think one of the things that I feel with the Old Norse culture or like the mythology and the aspects, obviously everything that we have now is interpretations because it's not a living culture. So we know certain things, but it's not a living culture like Hinduism or like Native American traditions or anything. It's not something that we've been doing for thousands of years. It kind of stopped when Scandinavia was Christian. It kind of stopped. Some of it has lived on, so you can put some pieces together, but it's hard to know exactly what's going on. So basically, a lot of stuff that people are doing now is they're using the runic alphabet, the Uthark or the Futhark. And all these, the intricacies of what the runes are named and how they relate to the season, the changing of the seasons and everything. It's very, very like psychological, actually. So when it comes to yoga, you can look at these runes and say, well, this rune represents like the ice rune, for instance, the eye rune, Isa, which is ice. It represents stagnation, stillness, frozenness, like something is still. And then the next rune is the Yera, the J rune, which Yera means year. So it's a circular rune that kind of talks about harvest and everything. So when you move from ice to Yera, everything starts to move and grow. So like if you look at those like intricate, like psychological things, not just in nature, but in the body, there you can see a lot of inspiration that kind of correlates with yoga, because sometimes we do feel stagnant. Like for me, for instance, I was sleeping really bad the other day when we're going home from our summer house, and like my shoulder got stuck. Like really, I couldn't turn my head, and yeah, it was just. So I started doing this practice that Maria put together, which focuses a lot on the shoulder and shoulder blades and everything. And it really loosened that up. So I moved from something stagnant, frozen, to something that was moving. So if you look at all the runes, they have different meanings and everything. You can correlate all of those into something yogic, because a lot of this stuff with yoga is very psychological. So in that sense, they're kind of connected. And that's the way we look at it when we try to connect these. Because also one thing that I think is, when you take something as a yogic tradition, obviously it stems from India and you have Hinduism, but it's a different culture and it's hard to understand it fully. But if you can take your own culture and assimilate that with the physical practice, you can sort of understand it better adapt to it better, I think. That's my personal opinion. But
very cool. Why is Sweden been traditionally such a hotbed for fucking amazing metal? Like, what is happening there? Is the water, what's going on?
I don't know. I mean, one thing that often comes up when we get these types of questions is that when we started out, for instance, I mean, these places in literally every town in Sweden, there was would be something called like a youth club or like a youth hall where you could go and just hang out like with your friends, shoot some pool, watch a movie. But they would also often have like rehearsal places that you could rent for cheap, and you could also borrow gear, and some even had like where you could get like people working there would know how to play an instrument and they would teach the kids how to play. So that stuff was going on when we were growing up, and I think that's a really big factor, because anybody in Sweden who wanted to, no matter what your background was, could start a band. You didn't have to have shitloads of money to be able to start a band. It was, you know, anybody could do it. So I think that's one of the main factors. But I also think that, and this is my personal opinion, so I'm not sure, but I think Swedes and Scandinavians in general are a very, very like melodic country. There are a lot of folk music traditions in these in the Scandinavian countries, and they're still very important, and they're still very, the folk music is very prominent in Scandinavia. And I think it reflects in the music as well. And I think that also may be a reason why metal is such a big thing here, because a lot of the folk music that we have up here is very melancholic, and like it's easier to adapt that sense of music into metal, I think.
Got it. Yeah. What did you listen to growing up? Like, what got you into metal?
It's funny. The first song I know that I listened to that would resemble any type of metal would be Twist and Shout by the Beatles. But I mean, I was just a kid. I was really young. But when I was about like 5, 6, 7, like my best friend had a brother who was 5 years older than him. And he would listen to all the classics like Deep Purple, Rainbow, Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, all those bands, right? So obviously you get into it through there. And then when when I was about 10, I found like Metallica. Another friend of mine played me Metallica, and I was like, this is fucking mind-blowing. Like, how can you play this fast? It was like kill them all, right? Right? So that's kind of like how the ball got rolling for me. And that's what I listened to when I was growing up. Like a lot of like old school heavy metal or hard rock, but also like then going into some harder stuff like Metallica and later Slayer.
Yeah, nice. Right.
What's always been interesting to me is like you kind of came out of like one of the great death metal scenes, like with what mm-hmm. was happening in Stockholm and
yeah
88 to 92, and obviously yeah. like Scum was a part of that, but you weren't really in Scum, right?
Well, Scum broke up, and when they reformed, I came in as a yeah. singer, but then there were some member changes and all of a sudden there was a new band. So
yeah, so my question is like, to what extent were like you personally invested in sort of what was going on in death metal and like with Entombed and Unleashed and Nihilist, and were you like part of that?
Personally, not at all. And I would say that us as a band, not very much, because we were from yeah. the southern suburbs.
Okay.
So for us, we were hanging out a lot with another band from the suburbs called Excretion. And they were really good friends with the Sultry, if you remember those guys, who were also on Metal Blade for a couple of albums. Those guys were our house gods in a way, where we grew up, because they were the first ones from our area that landed a record label deal. But the Stockholm scene was kind of weird because we never really belonged to it, even though we were from Stockholm.
That's what I was curious about.
Yeah. I mean, all those guys, like Entombed, Dismember, Unleashed, all those guys knew each other. They were from roughly the same area. But we were kind of like outside that. But oddly enough, I had a discussion today because, as you may know, LG Petrov, the singer from Entombed, passed away a couple of weeks ago. And I was talking to Martin Carlson, who's the editor of Sweden Rock Magazine, about when I met him. It was this weird thing because we had hardly released anything really. And I was at a bar in Stockholm and I went to play some like blackjack on, you know, they had like this casino part. So I was sitting there, you know, wasting my money, and LG Petrov was sitting a couple of chairs down, and I was like, oh shit, that's LG Petrov from Entombed, you know, like a little bit starstruck. And then I'm standing there and all of a sudden he turns to me and says, hey, you're Johan from Amon Amarth, right? And I was like, what? How the fuck, you know? And we just started talking, and he was like the coolest guy. We became friends, and I mean, obviously he had a lot of friends who were closer to him than I was, but we stayed in touch, you know. And I was really happy. I got to talk to him just a couple of weeks before he passed away, so it felt good to have done that because I didn't talk to him for a long time before that. So I'm really grateful that I got a chance to talk to him a little bit and see how he was doing and all that stuff. So
yeah, it was a great loss. Great loss.
Yeah, it's terrible. And it's a testament to him and who he was as well, because he was still talking about Entombed AD and how they were gonna do the next album and record. And he was a metal guy through and through, but super humble and like a really funny guy and genuine. Like, he was authentic in every sense of the way, really.
Switching gears, tell me, so you sent me some great boxing gloves.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
They're great, actually. I really love them. And it's funny, I train at a really famous gym in here in Los Angeles, Wildcard Boxing Gym, with Freddie Roach, who's a Hall of Fame trainer. He trains Manny Pacquiao, and it's an all pro gym. I'm like the only non pro that's allowed to work there. And whenever I kind of rotate my gloves around, but whenever I bring those in, everyone's like, "What are those?" Like, I've never seen that. The question, what is the story behind the, you know, Grimfrost and that whole thing?
Well, actually, two guys that I kind of like know on the side, like, but not really well. They approached me because they've always been like traveling merchants in Viking apparel, like swords, clothing, everything, right? But one of them got tired of it, so he started an online shop for Sweden. But he wanted to bring it to the next level and go like worldwide with it. But he felt he didn't have the know-how and everything. So he talked to his other friend, who is a bit of an entrepreneur. So they came up with the idea that they should ask me to be like part of the, like just as the face of the company when they started up. So just as a, you know, commercial thing, basically. So we had a meeting, and they were willing to offer me a part of the company, like, for doing this. And it was supposed to be like an hour meeting or something. And it turned into like a whole afternoon where we were spitballing ideas and everything. And all afterwards, they came back to me and said, hey, listen, we really like your ideas, and we like your thought of it. You want to be a full partner. So
nice.
So we started this company 5 years ago, and it's been going really well. And one of the ideas that we had was that we wanted to have like authentic, like period times, like weaponry, jewelry, clothing, all that stuff. But the idea was to build a bridge between the past and the present, and let the past inspire the present. So a couple of ideas that we had was to bring in gym equipment and also fighting equipment, because Vikings love doing sports and they loved fighting, obviously. So it kind of made sense to make boxing gloves. And obviously, you have to have the crusher on the glove,
yeah,
which is the hammer of Thor. That's what Mjolnir means. It means the crusher. Right. So it's, yeah.
Great, man. I love them. They're great. They fit well. They feel light.
I totally agree. I actually train myself. I'm not nearly as good as you are, but I train myself and I bought some different gloves in the past, both like more expensive and cheaper ones. And these are really, really high quality. I was really happy to feel the quality of these gloves when we got them, because I was when my colleague said that he'd found these gloves, I was like a little bit skeptical, because you figure out like could be iffy, you know. Yeah. You want to have a good quality product, and I think we found it.
Yeah, no, they're holding up great. I love them. Thank you very much again.
Hey.
Getting back to touring and whatnot. I mean, you guys definitely are. You're such a touring band. How long? Like, does your wife tour with you at all, or when you're on tour, you don't see her at all?
It's difficult to take her on tour all the time, but we try to make sure that she can come along for a week here or a week there.
Right. Yeah.
Usually, what I've been doing, and like actually what we did last time in the States, was that she came to Vegas. And she tagged along for three last shows. So she was along for 4 days. And then we went on vacation to Florida afterwards.
Nice.
So,
nice.
Yeah. So that's something that we try to do to make sure that, you know, we get some time together and just can hang out and also not be away from each other too long, because, you know, it can be tedious. And, you know, sometimes like it's 2 years ago now. But like when we just released Berserker, we went on tour in the United States with Slayer for 3.5 weeks, and then came back home 3 days. I had 3 days at home, and then festival tour started. So if she wouldn't have come along for some of the festival shows, we wouldn't have seen each other for like over 2 months. And, you know, that's.
I asked the question just because so many of the biggest bands in metal are, you know, still are the ones that established themselves 20 or 30 years ago. And when you're starting out, you're not thinking about wives or kids or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so I'm always curious about how that gets balanced when you have to be on the road so often.
I mean, it can be difficult, and it is a sacrifice. And I think one thing that I didn't appreciate, at least not in the beginning of a relationship, because I lived alone for so long, so I didn't really think about it, is that like life doesn't really stop when you go on tour. Like life at home doesn't stop when you go on tour,
right.
You know? She's not sitting up at home here and being happy about sitting at home. Yeah. You know, she has shit to do, and shit happens, you know? So it's you kind of have to remind yourself that you have to be present when you actually do talk. And we try to talk every day on tour. Like these days it's easy because, you know, you have your phone with Skype or, you know, FaceTime, whatnot. And so it's easy that way. But it when you're halfway across the world, then there's another problem, which is like the time difference. So right. Sometimes it can be difficult to time the phone calls, but we try to make it work.
I have a funny story about when Berserker was released. A good friend of mine, Stefan, who lives in Vegas, is a huge fan of Amon Amarth. And so when the day the record came out, he told me not to listen to it. And I was like, okay. Why? So just come with me. He managed, there's a nightclub in Las Vegas called Omnia. It's the biggest nightclub in the United States. It's one of the biggest nightclubs in the world.
Okay.
So the sound system is, as you might imagine, I mean, it's like unbelievable. And so we listened to it from beginning to end, just the two of us.
All right.
At like noon, we got some lunch and we just went in there and tried this thing on like this giant sound system. It was amazing.
That's awesome, man.
And it's funny. I don't know if you realize the whole reason we're sitting here today right now is because of you, right? Because you introduced me to Brian Slagle.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's how Brian and I became friends. And then I started turning Brian onto bands that he ended up signing. And after a bunch of them, he said, we should do a label. And so it's like this full circle thing that it's just,
yeah, it's awesome.
A record label now because of you. So thank
you. You know, I didn't mean to meddle in things, but yeah, that's awesome, man.
I didn't know that story.
Brian's awesome.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was, we met at a Slayer show, I think, at Madison Square.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I knew who Brian was when I was a teenager, because I every Saturday I would take the bus to, I grew up in Rhode Island, a tiny little town in Rhode Island. And I would take the bus to Providence every Saturday to buy all the new records. And they were, at that time in the 80s, they were, you know, it was coming, it was Metal Blade, it was Combat Records, you know, whatever was out there, Megaforce. But I knew exactly who Brian was. And then, so then to meet him, you know, 30 years later or whatever it is, 25 years later, and now to have a label with him is really surreal. And it's all because of you.
Well, you know, I tried my best. It's not because of me. It's actually... The only thing I did was give you a push out the door. No, I'm just joking. I'm not Gandalf, but you know.
Thank you also for including me in your documentary. That was really cool.
Oh yeah, dude! Thanks for doing it, man. It was brilliant. Yeah, it was. It was really cool to do that documentary. I it was a lot of fun to watch it as well. Like it really, I think it really came out great.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. It's fantastic. You know, we want to try to bring things to a close here. We don't want to keep you up all night. But so what's, if you could say, what happens between now and the end of 2022? Do you think you could get back on the road next year? You think there's a new record next year? What comes first?
I would say that probably, I mean, unless the festivals or some of the festivals happen this summer, I would say that a new record comes first. Then we're going to hit the roads. And I think possibly a new tour wouldn't happen until 2023 in that case, but it's hard to know.
Yeah.
It depends on how fast we work, how things develop. But I think it would serve us well to be patient and not stress out there, because as we spoke about earlier, the roads are going to be crowded for a long time. So,
yeah.
So it's, we're in a fortunate position that we are able to relax a little bit and take it easy and not stress about this. But I know a lot of other bands, unfortunately, are not in that position. So I totally understand that they need to get out there.
Talking to you brought back this very weird memory from high school. I had an Amon Amarth shirt with whatever lyrics on the back. And I got in trouble because the shirt was promoting violence.
Oh, really? Awesome.
Yeah, I thought you would appreciate that. I was thinking about that. Like, I totally forgot about that until this call. And I was like, oh, no, like, 10 years ago, I got in trouble at school for wearing an Amon Amarth shirt that said something
brilliant.
Being a barbarian and killing people.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that was like always like a favorite heavy metal memory of mine. So thank you for
that. Well, you're welcome.
And I have a funny road memory from being on that Mayhem Festival in 2013 with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Your guitar tech, Brucey Churchill.
Yeah, yeah.
Was
Brucey.
One of my best friends, and then we had lost touch. We hadn't seen each other in, he moved. He moved from New York to Boston, and we just kind of lost touch. Everyone's busy, and I probably hadn't seen or talked to him in 3 years. And then that one day I was rolled up on stage, and I saw him get your gear up, and I was like, what? And so we reconnected because of you guys too. So that's two things you've done for me.
See, well, I love Brucey, man. He's a fucking awesome guy, yeah, you know?
He's awesome.
Like, yeah, I love that guy. Crazy, crazy, crazy bastard. Yeah,
he really is. He's great, though. All right, so do me a favor. Can you spell the what you're doing with your wife? You spelled it earlier, but can you?
Oh, yeah. It's my last name, though. H-E-G-G.
Yep.
V-E-G-R.
And that's on Instagram,
Yeah. And then we have the channel on something called Boon TV, BOON.TV.
Okay, very cool.
It's also Hegvegger, by the way. So it's if you go there, look for it. It's going to be Hegvegger, and that's where we have the TV channel. And you can take a class and try it out, or you can do sign up for a monthly membership, or you know.
Yeah, I recently have. And I'm not being funny. I recently have, so I moved to Los Angeles to be with my wife full time because we were bi-coastal and
seeing
each other a lot. And so I've adapted, I've been drinking green juice through this whole podcast instead of beer. I've adopted a healthier lifestyle since I moved out here. And so I've also started doing, deep breath work and yoga and whatnot.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely going to check this out. And so anybody else who's out there listening, check this out, right? Hegvegr at Instagram, or you can find it on boon.tv. Do it. I resisted yoga and breath work for 49 years, and now as I enter 50, I feel better than ever. So do it.
Brilliant.
any last words from you? Anything you want anyone to hear or know?
Well, the only thing I can say is I really, really, really miss Beauty in Essex now.
We're reopening. We're reopening next week here in Los Angeles, and we're reopening in 2 weeks in New York. And I think this
time, awesome, man.
I think this time we're going to stay open. So
yeah, really happy about that. No, but seriously, that's something I want to do when I come back to the States.
Let's go. I'm ready. Your table is waiting.
Yeah, such great food. And thank you. By the way, I was going to say that when you brought up the boxing gloves, but thank you for the cookbook, by the way.
Oh, cool.
And it's coming handy. It's nice. It's difficult because we eat mainly vegetarian food here, but I've done some stuff and I've adapted it a little bit, and it's been beautiful anyway. So
awesome.
It's
I appreciate that, man.
It's awesome.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right. So that was awesome. Thank you everyone out there for listening to Delirious Nomads, sponsored by Blacklight Media. We will be coming back at you next week with another awesome guest. Be sure to follow Blacklight Media on socials for new music and more, and above all, keep it heavy.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.